Amanda Giles,
hello.
You're here on the pod. Yes. Thanks so much for coming out.
Of course.
And while she just came out of surgery on your Achilles, which...
ACL.
Did I... Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. So you just got...
Good.
I'm horrible. Horrible host, everything. And I made you walk up three flights of stairs to get here.
You told me about the stairs.
I was so happy to do it. And then I still saw you and I was like, oh, my God. Because you came in on a crutch, but you know, you're doing great, everything like that. How... Can you tell us like what happened that made you... Did you... You tore it, right?
Yes.
Was it skiing related?
Yeah, it was skiing. And trust me, I'm just happy to be out and about right now.
Yeah, I bet.
So much isolation that the stairs were nothing. I tore it back in March, actually, skiing, went off some like little jump and just landed ish. And then ski just spun out and tore my ACL. I didn't know at the time exactly what was wrong.
Okay. Could you get back on your ski and like go down the rest of the mountain, or did they have to like, okay.
Things felt off like this. It was painful for a couple minutes, but then it kind of subsided and I was like, okay, maybe I'm okay. So I tried to stand up on my skis and was like, okay. And then I tried to put weight on the right knee and it just felt weird. Like it felt like my like kneecap was like going the wrong direction.
Oh, really? Did you feel it like slide at all?
It felt like creepy. I don't know how to explain it.
No, I know what you mean. Was it like painful or was it just like different?
At that moment, it didn't feel painful. It felt like if I press harder on this leg, things were gonna like snap or something.
Oh my God. So you okay? Yeah. So now I'm like, did you get any more runs in? Like
I did. Well, I skied.
You did. Oh,
as
my
it
God.
Went on, I figured out how to use it and it felt off, but I got some more runs in. And then the next day I snowboarded, which I was like, I was on a trip and I wanted to try.
That's so, oh my God. That's so funny. And
go ahead.
No. I was going to say like, and it's funny because I feel like the injuries, because I'm a skier as well, but like, I feel like the injuries, I always hear like, snowboarding is like way more dangerous. Really? It's
skiing,
the opposite.
Yeah. And even in like in the surgery room, they're like, oh, classic skiing. I think it's like one of the main culprits for ACL.
I bet.
I think snowboarding is like bad for your like wrists if you're learning, and then bad for like your head and brain. I think it's more risky for that. But I think skiing is like knees.
So did they like, were they shocked? Like, well, so what made you go to the doctors if you were able to like still ski and do whatever?
Something was off.
Okay.
And so yeah, the second day when I snowboarded, I was trying to find like a knee brace in the little ski town, but I couldn't. And so I took the belt from a robe and just tied it around my knee.
You're incredible. That's amazing.
And was like, you know what, this feels secure enough, let me try it.
Oh my god.
Then I tried it and it felt off, but I could do it.
Okay. And you were like, I'm here. Where were you? Were you in?
I was in Switzerland.
Oh, so you're okay. That makes sense.
That I was part of it.
Because I was going to be like, maybe you're in Pennsylvania. Like, you might be able to travel.
That wouldn't be the case for East Coast.
But you're like, oh my God. So you're like, that's the Alps, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the day after, I was traveling to London for work. Oh. And so I was in London for a week.
Okay.
And could walk. Things were weird, but like, as time went on, I got back to being able to like walk more and more normally.
Yeah.
But like no running, like just needed to find out what was wrong. So I had an appointment the week I got back, and it was preliminary. So then they're like, okay, let's get you an X-ray next week,
like,
and an MRI 2 weeks later,
because
you have to wait for insurance and all this stuff. And I, all the research I did in like mostly ChatGPT was convincing me it was like meniscus, which isn't as bad. And if you do need surgery, it's a shorter recovery than ACL. And so I was like expecting, like, that was the worst case scenario. So then anyway, after MRI, weeks later, I go to see the doctor. And he also delivered the news in such a weird way. He hadn't looked at the results yet. And I came in just like so curious what it was and wanted to know. And he goes, he looked at the results and then came up to my knee and like pulled on it really hard. And he was like, do you feel the difference like between my knees? And I was like, yeah.
you're like, I have for a few weeks now.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah. And he was like, I think it's your ACL.
Oh,
and
what was your reaction in that moment? Yeah.
I was like, well, what do the results say?
Yeah.
I was like, what do you mean you think? Like, and then he goes, the results also say it's your ACL.
Okay.
Why'd you do this whole shock and awe thing? Like,
God.
Just tell me immediately.
Like, I love too. He's like, Because sometimes, not because what I thought you were going to say is that, like, this guy was going to be like, I'm pretty sure it's your ACL. Like, I don't need an x-ray because I could see doctors having that ego. Yeah, but maybe that's so theatrical. Like, it's so unnecessary.
And then he was like, we have good news and bad news. The bad news is it's torn, but the good news, it's not your meniscus, because that's pretty common to tear it all together.
Sure, sure. And then you I thought this was hilarious on TikTok, you went back to ChatGPT, right? And you were like, you messed this up, which was very...
I went back to ChatGPT and was like, hey, how could we have got this wrong? Like, trying to be nice. I said we. And ChatGPT was like, don't be too hard on yourself. It's an easy one to miss.
Oh, God.
Me? This was all you.
I get enough of this passive aggressive bullshit at work. I don't need it from AI tools now.
Exactly. But don't worry, me and chat are back to talking.
You guys are good now. You made up. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. Does chat, and I don't know the answer to this, does ChatGPT like remember previous conversations you've had with it?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Especially I'm not asking that in like a weird way. Like, is it going to remember everything? If you log back into the same account. Okay. That makes sense.
But I log in, I pay too.
And it's just so useful.
Yeah.
And like, especially cause I'm on the job hunt now and we talked a little bit about it, but it's like with resumes and stuff like that, it's just so helpful to get like as much as you need out there. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know, because my whole thing is like, people are like, you know, go back to Google, it's better for the environment, but Google gives you an AI, answer now anyway with like Gemini. So
before
I'm like,
before you can have the chance to turn it off. Right. I mean, maybe there's a way in settings.
There probably is. And I just am being lazy, not looking into it, but
yeah.
Amanda, we start this podcast, and I'm sorry, we should have kicked off with this, but we give a compliment always.
Whoa.
And I don't tell the comics, because a lot of comics are like, they're like, I would not come on this podcast if you were going to compliment me. But I was thinking very specifically, and you have, one of my favorite jokes, and I don't want to, if you want to cut it or whatever, we can, but it's, you tell a story about, I'll leave it as vague as I can, and then you feel free to hop in with the specifics, but you tell a story, a joke about your mom and your sister, and your mom is, we'll say, quite the character. Mm-hmm. But what I love about that joke specifically is my favorite kind of comedy is autobiographical, and it's so specific. Are you still closing with it? You know the joke I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes, okay. Yeah. And I love it so much because, again, my favorite type of comedy is autobiographical. Uh-huh. And it tells us so much about your perspective and also like where you come from. And I think that's so hard to do with like a really good joke, because it's literally just picking up, you know, sometimes I think like when we live our lives, we're like blind to the things that are like really interesting and like so funny that like we just kind of take for granted. And you just fucking nail it with that one joke. So go see Amanda and like follow her on Instagram and get tickets to the joke. I don't want to spoil it on the podcast, but like one of them, just my favorite. And it's one of those, like, you know, when you see a joke over and over and it like it still hits every time, it really does. So
that means a lot to me.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad, because some comics don't take the compliment section well and they're like very dismissive of it. So I'm glad.
I'm all ears.
More validation. Oh my God.
I'll take it.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is you're wearing a very interesting hat, which is everyone watches female comics. Is that what it says?
Yes, that's what it says.
So I am so curious, because I saw this on Instagram where you ordered a bunch. Can you give us like the context and the background of like how this started?
Yeah, it's not anything that big. It's kind of this little proof of concept right now. But basically, there's a brand owned by a lot of famous athletes like Sue Bird and many others. I'm not going to remember all the names. And it's called Together, and they have shirts that says everyone watches women's sports. And
it became
big. It's became bigger and bigger. It's heavily associated with like the WNBA. There's like celebrities wearing it. Like there's this famous picture of Jason Sudeikis wearing it to a game. And like Nike partnered with that brand and has hats and shirts and all that. So I wanted to kind of spread the love in
that's
the comedy
so cool.
space.
No, I love that so much. Can Thanks. I tell you, because I know on your Instagram story, you said, you know, you were like, if people like want one, please let me know. What I was fearful of, and this is my anxiety, is that if I wore that out, and please like let me know, like, do you think there's like people that would think I'm like wearing it ironically? You know what I mean? Like to be funny.
I see.
You know what I mean? And it's like, obviously not, but like, that was my one fear. Cause obviously like I love the concept and everything, but I was like, I don't know if that's a good look for a straight white man, to be honest. Like, you know, so, but maybe I'm being oversensitive.
It could be seen as that. Like when I, but like some people reacted to this story and were like, oh my God, so funny. And I'm like, if that helps you buy a hat, sure.
You're like, I have 40 of these I'm trying to move. So like, sure, but no.
Well, I just posted the story. I didn't like order them or anything, and was just, I don't know, thinking about it. I think when I was like, in isolation with my knee and just thought it could be an interesting project.
Yeah.
And posted it, went to this little design site, and like 35 people DM'd me and wanted a hat.
That's awesome. Yeah. How many, what was the male to female ratio of who wanted a hat?
Pretty split.
I love that. That's really cool.
I think pretty split. All maybe right, so like maybe, one yeah. or two more women than men.
And here's the thing is like one thing I feel like I need to get over is like, and this is me like overanalyzing myself, but I'm like, okay, if people think that like I'm wearing it as a joke, like I'm fucking not. So that's their problem.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get a hat because I want one.
Might start a conversation. Oh, yeah. I should have brought one for you.
Next No, because I wanted to. Yes. Oh my God. And yes, which is so wonderful. You have it. When is, it's September 3rd.
September 3rd.
I think by the time this episode comes out, it'll already pass, but hopefully it'll be a recurring thing at Flophouse Comedy Club.
Yeah.
Which is so fun. You run it with Gabe Corser, who's been on this podcast as well. Yeah. Go out and check his episode out. It's awesome. How did you meet Gabe? How did you guys connect? Because you're both like so funny and like such wonderful people, and I saw you guys were like working together. I was like, that's he's the best.
Yeah, I first saw him at a show at like One and One and was just like, who is this guy? He's so funny.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah.
And then I think when Steph and I ran Girls Interrupted, he's also been on the show, we had him on. He was fantastic and just such a great guy to work with. And then we just kept in touch, would hit a mic once in a while. Yeah. And wanted to start something new in Williamsburg and thought of him and reached out and he was on board, and it's just been so, I don't know, simple and easy to work with him.
Yeah.
We've tried a couple different kind of gimmicks, honestly. The first one didn't fully work.
But and that was the name show.
The name show.
So, and the concept was, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was you would have comics on, you would draw names, mm-hmm. and you would have comics on with that particular name. And if you had that name, you could go to the show for free.
Yes.
Right. And you said it didn't work out? Because I went to the first one and people seemed like they had a blast.
Oh, I mean, the shows were so fun and we all wore name tags and it was like.
Yes, I remember that.
It was a fun concept to kind of like play with on stage. The first show, we had a good amount of people with those names showed up. Yeah. The second and third, people came to the shows, but like. Almost no one with that. Like, I think one person with the name. Second.
Oh, that's interesting.
Who just was friends with Gabe. He would have been there anyway.
That makes sense.
And same thing for the third. And so the idea right now, like, we don't have huge marketing budgets. I'm sure you deal with the same thing. But, like, what's an idea that can help it stand out as a show?
Yeah.
To be interesting and kind of get someone's attention. So thinking the name thing could be it. And maybe it could work down the road with more promotion and getting the word out. But for now, we're like, well, tried it three times and had fun. Let's try something new.
Well, I love it too. And it's like, here's the thing. And I forget who I was having this conversation with like gimmicks. If it's like, you know, there's negative connotation there. If a gimmick, quote unquote, is done well, I think it's great. Like, I think it can be so fun. And this one in particular is so fun. And I love too, because my fiance, who I bug to come to comedy shows literally all the time, mm-hmm. like I just told her the concept that I was hosting and she's like, oh my God, I want to come to that. Which is, can I say on the pod?
Yeah.
With the concept? I'm like being so careful. I don't know why.
like there's any like secrets. I'm like, no, we haven't our press release yet. We have zero.
You're going to have to go through PR first.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have to clear this after.
But the concept is that for each of the comedian sets, you're going to bring someone on stage and there's going to be a challenge for them to not laugh through the entire set. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, they get through without laughing, they're going to get a free drink, which is so fun. Mm-hmm. And what I think is so brilliant about it is that I think with comedy now specifically, when people go to a comedy show, and let's say, you know, I think like people who go to a lot of comedy shows get that like it's about the comedian and it's not about like audience engagement. This perfectly blends the audience engagement.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if I'm in the audience watching that, like I'm going to identify with that person.
Yeah.
And it's going to like fulfill, like scratch that itch mm-hmm. almost of like, oh my God, I'm like in the show with this person.
Yeah.
So it's going to be so fun.
Oh, and it's kind of experimental. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see if it works.
I think take a risk.
Yeah. And it's like with the gimmick stuff, like, yeah, it's not that deep. Like,
no, people. Yeah, it's come on. It's not. Yeah,
it's fun to try. We're having fun. Some comics have been like, I don't know if I would try that. Others really? Have been like, sweet, put me on. That come sounds on. Awesome.
It's like we just do fun things, have a fun night out, and it's gonna be great.
Some of it, we're like, we're gonna see how it plays out, but like maybe the comic will kind of talk directly to the person they're trying to make laugh or roast them a little bit. And so I'm excited to see how things like that work out.
And the lineup's really great too for this first show.
The lineup's fun.
And not just because I'm on it, whatever. No, it's
especially
really, really good.
Especially because you're on it. Oh, no, Matt's going to be hosting. Amanda.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
I'm very excited. It should be. It's going to be a lot of fun. Ever. And Flophouse is such a great. I love what they're doing at that venue. It is like such a great. Because I go to the mics there all the time, and that's mm-hmm. becoming like my go-to workout room if I like have a new bit or something I'm working on. It's been
great mics, yeah. great shows, great lounge for comics.
Oh
yeah,
my god,
I love
yeah
Flophouse
it's
a lot.
Has it been hard, because I imagine, and maybe you're still doing like a good bit of comedy, but has it been hard with your injury? Has it been holding you back a little bit?
Definitely less mics and less shows. I'm an idiot and had shows like scheduled like that days after surgery and was like, yeah, I'm gonna be like on crutches, but I'll show up. And I had one that, like in New Rochelle, like that Saturday, and was like, no, I think I can do it. And then had to like cancel a few of those.
No, oh, that's heartbreaking.
But I just didn't do enough research. I did finally. And so I canceled them like with decent time, like notice. But
yeah,
since then it did take a while to, if I did a show, I'd be like Ubering both ways, do my set, come off.
Sure,
but
sure.
Can't bark, which is a lot of my like source
yeah,
of shows
how
right
you get,
now.
Yeah, I get that.
And yeah, not as many mics, so.
I hear you.
But yeah. It's a new sense of like gratitude for it as I'm like healing and able to go and do more mics and shows. Instead of just a normal Tuesday, I'm like, oh, I feel lucky to be here right now.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, that means so much. But also too, it's like I have also been, you know, in that same way, been trying to look at it through that lens of more gratitude in terms of like, we get to go out and like try new things. Cause I think in comedy specifically, it's so easy to just get down on yourself of just like, I'm not doing enough and I'm not whatever. But you know, just the fact that I think about all the time, I don't know if you think about this, but like the things that have to be in place for like this to be a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For you to just like have all these opportunities to like go and work out on stuff and then do what it shows and stuff. It's astounding.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, we have to first off like live in New York City with like people that are interested in going to like comedy shows.
Yeah.
Which, you know, so I think about that all the time, but.
Totally.
Yeah.
And to like, to really see this thing out, you also have to. You have to live sustainably. So like there's times I get down on, no, I haven't done enough mics or shows or whatever. And then it's like, no, this is a long game. And health is first.
Yes.
To be able to do that.
Can I tell you what's really opened my eyes to that is being unemployed. And that has been a like, because so many, I think you and I are very similar in that during the day, we both work demanding jobs, I would say. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is just fucking losers, not working hard.
Yeah.
No. But you know what I mean? Where it's just like sometimes mentally it can be draining and, you know, just whatever. But, you know, to do, like, it's a requirement to like be able to do all that, because I think a lot of some, and again, I'm speaking for myself here, but like when I'm working and like, let's say, you know, working long hours and I have a day where, you know what, I didn't get to do anything comedy wise because of work and that got in the way, I'll get really, really down and depressed about it. But to your point, it's necessary because, you know, you have to be able to live your life and to be able to provide for yourself too, in order to do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So
which I think I forget a little bit.
Lesson with that I always think about is like in a previous job when I wasn't very happy at work, but my workload wasn't high. The way things, in a sense, we might have overhired, whatever. But I was so unhappy there despite that. And I was like, it was a really difficult decision to leave because I was like, in a way, this gives me so much time for comedy.
Yeah.
But I'm so miserable there and thinking about it. And I made the switch and I was particularly worried in a new job, I'd have to like get in, work more hours, improve myself, and maybe even end up working longer hours once I proved myself. But making the switch has been so good for my life and mental health. And that has made me better at comedy because life feels
really good.
The lifestyle feels sustainable again.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a long game and it's about, you know, just putting. Yeah. I'm really happy to hear you say that. Were you like one thing I've noticed about myself is that, you know, when I was in this last job, you know, it would take up a lot of my time. If I didn't get to go out and like do it, I would feel depressed because of that fact. Mm. Right. So would you get that too, where it's just like, I'm learning it's something I need just to like be even keel, if that makes sense. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I think it's not just like, oh, I didn't go to it by reaching my goal. I think I've learned a lot through like the isolation from this and like living on my own and just even times I would want to go to an open mic or whatever. Sure. So yeah, it's two things. It's like the feeling of productivity by doing mics, and then it's also missing the community and the feeling of being creative. And it's such a like good reset from the corporate world in a way that like I miss it for both of those reasons.
That's really, yeah, the community is really like something I've really been blessed that I've kind of built over the past few years and stuff. Yeah. And it's really sometimes like even that on its own is enough. You know what I mean? Just to like be with so many creative people and so many funny people.
And have a network. Show up to some random mic at some random time you see online and you look around and know half the people.
That's the coolest thing is when you go to like a new mic you haven't checked out and like, oh, I know somebody here and like that kind of thing. The other thing though, man, is that like when I have comics I know and respect in the crowd, man, does that for me, it adds another level of pressure because I'm like, because I'm very much, I don't know if you can tell, I put a lot of pressure on myself and like, very, you know, self-conscious. Similarly. Yeah, you know, and it's like, which is so funny because I think about if it was flipped, like if I saw you like go on stage and let's say you bomb, very rare, obviously, but like, let's say you do, but let's say, you know, it's like not your best set. Like in my mind, I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, what, like it literally doesn't fucking matter. Amanda's hilarious, whatever. Yeah. But if I'm that person, then it's like the end of the world.
Totally.
And it's like, I think it's about like, for me, I have to rewire my brain to be like, no, other people think the same way I do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, yeah, your reputation is strong. Like you have obviously a great one, but just all of ours are stronger than what someone sees in the exact moment.
Yes.
Of like,
and that's,
we see each other online. We hear about each other from others. Yeah. Like, but it is a little bit of a balance. And I think if I completely bomb an open mic, I'm not gonna even know if those jokes worked that well, because
yeah, that's the thing.
If
with
you bomb one, then you're down on the next one, then like that next one might have been fine. But so I try and go in somewhat strategically. Like I try and be on the line of like, okay, I'm doing one or two maybe less new jokes or like newish jokes that I still want to work on, but like are going to get the crowd to kind of relax and listen to me.
Yeah.
And then put in the new ones. Because, yeah, it's, again, not sustainable if you all new jokes bomb multiple times a week and you're trying to just get on with your life.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. Which is so much of it. It's just like, yeah, I'm just trying to move forward, man.
But what's your philosophy on that? Because that might be something where it's like people disagree with and think you should just take more risks.
With risks specifically, I love Pete Holmes, and like his whole thing is like, or he said this on his podcast where he's like, if we're not taking risks, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Which I love because it's so true. And like, it'll calm me if I'm trying something new that's like a little out there and weird. That's how it's like stretching, right? It's like you want to take these little risks and eventually over time, like you'll grow and see whatever. That has been the real thing that I've noticed. And what's been cool about doing this for, again, I'm still new by many, many people's standards, but you know, like 4 years is enough, I think, to see a lot of personal growth in this. And what I've really adopted this past year, and this is funny, I talked about this with Ryan Lynch on the last episode, just coming at this from like a personal growth standpoint, like, you know, I just want to see how good I can get at this.
Yeah.
And that's going to come over time, not month to month, especially not like week to, you know, I mean, maybe week to week, month to month, you'll see like growth, but the real growth you're going to see is like through years and years and years of doing it. So, you know, that's what I kind of come back to what we talked about before. This is like a marathon. It's not a sprint. And if you turn it into a sprint, that can be detrimental because then you're just going to burn out. Have you like felt that burnout before?
There's been times, I think I rarely question my like love for comedy. I think there's obviously times where you stand back and you're like, am I progressing enough? Am I progressing fast enough? Sure. I think there's more like, I sometimes question living in New York. And so I think I worry more about like what I give up for comedy.
That's interesting.
Am I giving it up? And is it this thing where like I kind of have this maybe unhelpful thought, but in my mind, moving to another city, like I'm from the Northwest, went to college in Colorado, very outdoorsy, and I miss that a lot here. And so I think about moving back to those places, but the thought of leaving New York feels like I'm giving up on comedy.
Yeah, I could see that. Do you miss like the Northwest?
Yeah, I miss, it's been so long since I lived in Seattle. Well, I did it a little bit during the pandemic, but obviously different times. But I miss like access to nature and slower pace and all that. But I'm here really because I love comedy, and I like a lot of things about New York. I like it. I love it here.
I thought you were gonna be like, and you know, I like you, you're fine, and like, you
you're
know, some
reason,
other people,
you're the comedy Matt Penna.
Is it like you bring up, like, which is such a interesting point, like that access to nature and the pace, like was that something that was really hard to adjust in New York, like when you came here?
A little bit. I came here for work and was thrown into that. So I don't even think I like knew it or could articulate it at the time. But like looking back, I do think that was part of what made the adjustment harder.
What was like the biggest shock when you came here? Do you remember?
I like moving to New York. I feel like I learned so much about myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's just a place where it's like, it's this feeling of like, who the fuck are you? And so you kind of have to like figure out who you are, and you're like, you get more convicted in yourself in a sense.
Yeah. I like that. It's funny. We had Jared Waters, who we both love, on this podcast as well.
He's the best.
And he talked about doing stand up in like New York. And this is again specific to comedy, but like he talked about like he had a realization. He was like, oh, like he was on some show, I think like during the pandemic or something, where he was just like, he looked around and he was like, oh, I'm not special. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not, you know, made him work harder. And like you said, he had that kind of like conviction to like go at it even harder. And some people had the opposite reaction where it, you know, it kind of, you know, forces them to like shrink a little bit.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting because when you're out in New York, and I started comedy elsewhere-ish, and I don't know, if someone hears you're doing comedy and if you're the only comic they know, they're like, oh my gosh, when's your Netflix special? Like all this crazy shit. Sure. And then like, they don't get that you're in this whole subculture of like tens of thousands of people just in like New York, maybe more trying to make it in comedy.
Right, right. And again, like it's coming up on subsequent episodes. But like, again, with Ryan Lynch, we talked about this idea of, quote unquote, you know, making it.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like Gabe Malika says this wonderful thing that I love, which is that he was on stage one time and he was talking about how like, making it isn't what's interesting. It's what you're making that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I always come back to that, where it's like, you know, it's just about doing the thing.
Yeah.
Right. And that's like at the end of the day, what it really is about. And that's like what I've learned, I think, the most this year, mm-hmm. I think, is like what I've come to realize. Now, Amanda, you said you were from Seattle originally.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. And you said you started comedy in Seattle or like around?
I did my first open mic at the end of college in Denver.
In Denver, okay. In Denver. And you went to college in Colorado, you said, right?
Yeah.
Nice,
yeah.
Okay.
Colorado School of Mines.
Ooh. Wait, Colorado School of Mines?
Yeah. Like, it was like originally a mining school.
Wow. Oh,
and
my
then
God.
It's engineering now.
Okay, gotcha. Were you an engineer?
I studied math and computer science.
That's really interesting. Okay. Is it difficult to be a woman? Because I think computer science is very male dominated. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. Especially at the time, I think it like blew up slightly after, but the school is like 75% male.
Wow.
And especially computer science, like there's a class of 40 people where I was the only woman. There's a lot, I don't know, that discipline can also attract, maybe, and this is a generalization, but like not always the most like socially adept people, in
sure,
a sense
sure.
where it's like there are people, individuals that can be extremely condescending to you and assume that you like have no skills and are not able to like do well in those types of classes and projects. And yeah, totally. That the parts of that were hard. Just a lot of imposter syndrome with that.
Yeah. Have you experienced like, cause I think, again, it's hard for me to say, I don't have the female perspective, but like in comedy specifically, do you find that like, I imagine it's, I think it's fair to say it's still very male dominated. Mm-hmm. So like, do you think like you were able to take what you learned at college and apply it to comedy a little bit with that mentality?
Yeah, maybe a little. I don't think I've made that connection a ton before, but I mean, I think it's like, it was college, it's the corporate world, it's comedy.
Yeah,
like it is all very male dominated.
Sure,
and,
sure.
It doesn't feel like the biggest, like there's issues within that affect me for sure every day, but like it doesn't feel like the biggest issue in my life, if that makes sense. But if I zoom in and try and like think about it, I think it's just feeling like on the outside and working extra hard to, there's more eyes on you to see if like you feel like you're representing your gender when you are attempting something. And so I think that can add pressure. That's more for like, I would say, on the academic side. I don't feel that necessarily in comedy because we all see each other.
That's interesting. So you would feel like in college, like, I need to be good not only for myself, but to prove that, like, women in general can
be good at this. Yeah, because there would be, there's just, like, an assumption, or there's just more, like, attention on you. And, like, I worked a couple years as, like, software engineer, and I think there was a bit of that as well.
Yeah, no, of course. And I know where it's funny, because, like, we're kind of working backwards in your timeline here, but the low point you wanted to discuss today was that I, in around high school and early college days, you suffered a big bout of depression. So I guess, like, where I'm interested in starting is, could you tell us about kind of like your childhood growing up in Seattle?
Yeah, sure. I
would love to like hear more.
Yeah. How do I summarize it? Basically, I was born and grew up outside of Seattle in a suburb, and parents split when I was three. And would go back and forth with my older sister between their houses. And that is how mostly grew up. Played a lot of sports and did well in school. I was pretty like, put a lot of pressure on myself, like pretty like self-disciplined.
Were you like an AP class student? Like,
yeah,
me too.
Yeah. And yeah, didn't need a ton of like parent direction to like do well in school. Just like felt like I knew it was important to do for
That's
my
interesting.
Future.
So you didn't have like parental pressure to do well in school. You were just like,
Not
I need
really.
To do well. That's really interesting.
There's a lot. I mean, about my parents, and I love them, but there's not a ton of pressure. Maybe that's, I haven't felt that, and maybe siblings have because I've put that on myself.
Sure.
But yeah, I haven't felt a ton of that. But yeah, I think growing up it was to kind of summarize things and not go into too many details, but just like fairly unstable and a lot of things children shouldn't have to like see or deal with, and just not the most emotionally like space, emotionally safe spaces.
Yeah, sure. And this is like, and this is while you're like starting high school around this time?
It,
or just
like it was
like
that growing up.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So kind of in and out of how volatile those time periods were. But yeah.
Would you say, and it's interesting because, again, without disclosing too many details, I think my fiance has experienced something similar where, you know, she was put in situations where you don't necessarily want to be in through those like formative years. During going through those periods, like, were you able to like step out of yourself and be like, all right, this is like, I need to deal with this, or this isn't normal? Or was it just like you were kind of in the moment and just trying to get through it?
I think you're in it and you don't know when anything's like off or weird until you're like 12.
Yeah.
And then you start to compare with others and articulate a little bit more what experiences feel like. But before that, your parents are kind of your world. And
And it's like you don't have the worldview or the perspective to like start questioning those.
Yeah.
Right? You think it's like normal that the stuff is going on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it developed a lot of anxiety and just like hyper awareness of the people around me, emotion.
Sure.
And like not wanting to step on eggshells and always wanting to like anticipate when someone might be mad.
Would you describe yourself as the emotional referee of your family? And I only say because I'm projecting here.
A little bit.
Sure.
It's, my family's very blended and mixed and segmented in a way.
Sure.
So a little bit.
It sounds like it's very like kind of and not in a selfish way, but like self-survival type, like you were
a
trying
little
to
bit,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, of just wanting to get through a day and not kind of cause a fuss and things like that.
Were you right? Because I imagine too, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, this feeling of like, I just want to keep the peace and like just keep
exactly and like there's a lot of times where it's not worth it to like say your truth or what's right for you. And it's not because I want this person to be happy and I care more about their feelings than my own. It's more like, I know I need to just dissipate this for my best day.
for
my
to,
own sake.
Yeah.
So I'll say whatever I need to say to get to the other side.
Yeah. So. I mean, and that makes sense, like, especially if you're experiencing this around like 12 and maybe around that time, it sounds like you're starting to like maybe become aware of the, you know, the, your upbringing and things. And then, you know, you enter high school, which is already like, you know, I mean, such a tumultuous time for so many people. Do you remember like your first like bout of like depression where it really kind of took hold?
I think I was always like very sensitive growing up, and I think there would be times of like unexplained sadness. I would not say prior to this like summer after high school I was in a like deep-seated depression. I think there's like signs looking back of just like who I how I was as a kid, how I was growing up, but like I think it really the first and probably like deepest in a lot of ways most like debilitating depression I've been in was that summer after high school.
After so going into college.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And part of that was growing up back and forth, mom and dad's house, all this stuff. My sophomore year I stayed back and lived with my mom, and it was pretty like tumultuous and a lot of fighting. And then my junior and senior year, I moved to Thailand to finish high school at an international school. I always
forget you went to Thailand. Yeah. And, like, live there for so many, for, right? Like,
yeah. I did my junior and senior of high school there at an international school right outside of Bangkok.
How did you, like, come to that opportunity?
My dad and stepmom, so I grew, my stepmom became my stepmom when I was 5. I have 2 younger brothers with their parents. And growing up, would go back and forth. And then my dad knew someone that was retiring from the international school. I was like a choir teacher there, and he's a choir teacher for high school in Washington, and then applied for the job. And they were like, if we get this, like stars would have to align, but it's a 2-year commitment. We could try it and come back after.
What was your feeling like about that?
I was like, whoa. It was unclear what it would mean for my life, because the first year they went, I think my mom made it like not legally possible to like move there with them.
Okay.
There's a lot of like court stuff.
Yeah, no, and we don't have to get into it. Yeah.
But then I got to visit them though. And then it did become this thing that I was able to like seek out myself and be like, I got to see them over there. I hadn't traveled much prior to that. So it was all very like, I don't really know much about this or what this is, but I got to go see how they lived there, see the international school. My dad set up time for me to play soccer with the soccer team.
Oh, and that's so cool.
There were a couple things where I was like, okay, I could go do this. And then I was like, gonna do it. My dad also made it an opportunity where I could go for like a semester and come back.
And oh, so, in case you didn't like it. Okay. Yes, so it seems like
So it became this thing where like, I had the choice myself. It was completely up to me. I'll never forget the day I decided to do it. I was like 15, but I was like, I had to decide by a certain date, whatever. And so I was going to go for a semester, see how I like it, do more of like an exchange. But then I went and loved it and stayed and graduated there.
Wow. Oh my God. So now that's such a huge decision for a 15-year-old to make, especially because it's like, again, high school, at least for me, like I felt very fortunate that I had like established friends and like people I hung out with. And like, you know, I felt like I had a life there. Again, I was very lucky to experience that. Did you in the same way like feel that established or? OK, so totally. It must have been hard to like say goodbye. Yeah,
it was friends. It was.
Oh, my God.
Teams I played on.
Yeah.
And so I don't think I would have been able to make that jump and decide myself had it not just been that one semester, because that was something I could, I don't know, actually like go back and forth on. And it didn't seem so like I could still come back the second half of my junior year, finish senior year, like all these things you like think about growing up. And I was in the same like school district my whole life up until that point. So it very much was like, the plan. So it felt crazy and interesting. And I'm a risk taker. I think that's something in a lot of scenarios that come up in my life where I like take pretty big risks that I have a hard time. I take bigger risk bites than I can sometimes emotionally handle.
No. And I mean, can I be honest? Like I envy that. Cause like in my world, I love how you're like, yeah, pros I mean, too, it's pros and cons. Yeah. I don't know. I would be, because just in my position, I hear that. And at 15, I just like I would my head would be spinning. I wouldn't even know how to think straight and like think about that decision.
It was all a little bit of research, talking to people, visiting them were the biggest things. And I really I was wanting to live with my dad and stepmom. Like home life was rougher where that was part of the deal where I was like, I am open to trying something new right now.
That's really, really interesting. So like it was almost like this trip would like offer a little bit maybe more stability.
Yeah.
That's
so, oh yeah. And then moving there, it was like the most like stable my home life felt up until that
point. Can you tell us like what is it like when you get there? Like what was your first semester like there?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's outside of Bangkok. It's very like hot near the equator, tropical weather. Monsoonal rains. I would like wear a rain jacket and everyone laugh at me except me from Washington, and so I don't know, it's so hot there you don't like wear a rain jacket. Sure. They were like trying it on at the school party.
That's
once.
So funny. Oh my god,
there was so much shock to me. And the school is English speaking, so there's enough that feels familiar-ish. There's maybe, I'm not gonna get these percentages right, but I want to say like 20% Americans.
Okay. So you weren't the only American student there.
Wasn't the only American student. Okay. And then a lot of Asian nationality representation, like probably half the school, part of that being Thai students. And then students from Europe, Australia, like Middle East, a lot of, and then get smaller for percentages beyond that. But it felt like an international experience more than it did necessarily like in the life of someone who is Thai.
That must have made it feel like a little better, just because like you must have had other people who were having a similar experience getting thrown, I don't want to say thrown, but like taking up an opportunity to like do this new, be in a new place.
No one, or there were some new students, but I did feel like I was rare in being like born and raised in like America my whole life. Okay. And then this being this brand new experience. But the school was so, all the students were so nice and welcoming. They're used to students coming and going, and they seemed younger than students at like my public school in Washington, but they were a lot more worldly and open-minded, and
sure.
It just looked different, like their values, and yeah, really cool school where like everything was celebrated. I feel like in Washington, it was just like sports were cool. Everything else was lame.
Yeah, it seems to like be a completely different experience than like typical American high school, but in like a good way.
Yeah.
It feels almost like a little bit like when you go to college, where mm-hmm. it's like a little bit more, again, like you said, diverse and mm-hmm. people are open to certain things. Did you join the soccer team there?
Yeah, I joined the soccer team. It was so fun. Made good friends from that. The school is like in this expat community, and students are riding like golf carts around it and motorbikes and all these things. So like there's aspects that feel really cool and exciting. And like I got to go to school for free because my parents worked there.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of the students that go there come from a ton of money. And okay. So friends I made were, and cost of living is so low there. So it'd be like friends with drivers and maids and I don't know, living in like luxurious mansions with pools and things like that. Sure. And so that was a very interesting aspect, as well as like going out in Bangkok at age 16.
That's crazy.
And buying vodka from the 7-Eleven down the street.
That's crazy.
That was so fun and exciting and dangerous looking back. But
well, yeah, but you would go out, like, it sounds so much like a little bit of like an early glimpse into like college life.
Oh yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, we'd be going out to clubs. It was wild.
At 16?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then it was a good living situation.
And you lived on the campus of the school?
Yeah, in teacher housing.
In teacher housing, okay.
Which was totally fine. Yeah, that makes it sound like it was, I don't know. But what else about it? I think I got there and I've never just being from a suburb and always, I don't know. I just, growing up when you're American, I just felt like, just this normal girl. And in a sense where it's like Americans, I felt in myself that like, whoa, in America we feel like it's America and then like foreign country.
Literally. No, concept. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, not to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No.
No, I was just going to say, and it's like, I mean, look at how I'm reacting. Like, I'm like, oh my God, clubs at 16 and like all these different things. Like, I just feel like the American experience, especially like for high school, is so defined mm-hmm. that it's very hard to imagine a world like outside of that.
Yeah.
And again, this is my own personal ignorance, I'm sure, that's at play here. But just to like, you know, to have that, especially so early on at 16, I'm sure is like something you probably like still carry with you. Right.
Yeah. Where it's like, yeah. It was just this this concept that hit me with that. I was like, whoa, America is one of many countries.
Right. Like, yeah. It's like, we're not the only one.
Yeah. It made me realize how like America-centric my view was. And
yeah.
Then learned, like, obviously learned more about Thai culture in Southeast Asia. Got to travel a lot for, like, sports tournaments. We'd, like, were in this league, essentially, with five other international schools in other Southeast Asian countries. And
So you would travel to other countries?
Twice a year, we would do, like, these tournaments at other international schools.
That's great. What other countries did you go to?
I don't know if I'm going to remember them all off the top of my head. But Singapore American School. Kuala Lumpur,
okay,
Manila, so the Philippines.
Wow.
Taipei. There's one more.
You can do it.
I got to travel to all of them while I was there. I don't remember.
No, it's okay. This is awful. I wish I could help you, but my geography is terrible.
It's totally fine.
I didn't know there was a country, Manila, like the envelope.
Manila's in the Philippines.
In the Philippines. There you go. See? Mm-hmm. The more you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. Wow. So you spent 2 years at the school.
Mm, yeah.
And it seems to have been like a really great experience.
Yeah. Really formative for me. Opened my worldview. Made really, really solid friends.
Are you still in contact with them?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
They're great. I see them here and there. There's five girls that, like, us five got really close, and then we had like a group of guys too, where like we were together every weekend. We were having so much fun.
Yeah.
We're all close to this day. But the four girlfriends, for years now, they've all like got married, had kids on the like earlier side of things.
Sure.
They don't travel as much these days, but I see them when I can. And that's
very
fun.
Sweet. I think you went, did you go last year? I think.
Yes.
I remember you going to Thailand at some point.
I went to Thailand earlier this year in February.
Oh, this year. Okay,
I went to a friend's wedding from the school. And then, probably my best friend from the school lives in Norway. And so I'll visit her sometimes.
Oh, that's cool. That's incredible. Are you guys like all spread out now? Like, or is it like one friend in Norway, one in America, and the rest are in Thailand?
I have friends in Thailand still. I'd say of the four like close knit girls, like one's in Belgium, one's in Norway, and then two are LA area.
Oh, get out. They live in LA?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
so,
cool.
It's the school feels like a lot of the students, I don't know the portion, but a good amount go to American universities because there's a lot of pressure put on students there and the school's expensive and all that. And so, a lot will try to go to. Yeah, like Ivy League and just big schools in the U.S. and then some go to Europe, some Australia. It's all over. But.
So you have this incredible experience for 2 years. Sounds like it was, for the most part, like very positive.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's time to come home, right? Mm-hmm. How did you deal with that?
I didn't want it to be over. I was so sad. It was, just great, stable home life and then all these incredible experiences, such a solid friend group, and it just felt like not real. I was grateful like almost every day while I was there.
Yeah.
I was like, this is really wild.
Were you able to like, and I only ask because I don't think I would have had this ability like when I was that young, but like to look around and like take a moment to be like, I'm here now in mm-hmm. Thailand and like this is going to end at some point. Did you have that foresight or was it like it hit you like a pile of bricks like when it was time to leave?
I knew to be grateful for it and that, especially being like, I first went for the semester, so then decided to stay that full year and then only later decided to stay the year after.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so it was very much like, this is temporary. But after high school, what I was going back to for college was the biggest unknown to me. And since I turned like 16, I didn't have any interest in like getting older and doing all those things.
Sure.
I was so happy to be a kid. And so there was a lot of that of like, I applied for colleges and like did it cause it's the right thing to do and like worked hard on it. But I wasn't into the idea. I wasn't excited about it.
About going to college.
No.
And it's like funny cause I look back and like for me going to college, like I'm very fortunate. I went to a high school where like going to college was like part of the culture. So it was like, it was a school where like they just pumped out college kids. Like, you know, like this is what you do. You go to this high school and you do whatever. And I remember my car ride up to school. I like had to hide from my parents that I was sobbing in the back seat because I was so scared.
Yeah.
And it's like you, because you literally, you don't know anybody.
Yeah.
And especially in like American culture, like college is like this experience. You're like, you go 4 years and people tell you it's supposed to be the best time of your life, and you, and you're walking in literally to the unknown.
Yeah.
But like what I find so interesting about your experience, Amanda, is like, and maybe I shouldn't compare because it's different circumstances, but like, when I hear it, I'm like, you've been through like an unknown experience like that before, mm-hmm. but it doesn't sound like in that moment for you, it felt like, hey, I did this, I can do this. It felt like it must have still like, you've had that same feeling where like you were walking into the unknown.
Yeah. And sorry, briefly, can we pause? Is there a way to put my like,
you want to, I know. Yeah. You just had surgery. So no worries. Let's do this. Hold on.
Work, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Can I do a little bit? I don't want to mess up that one.
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay, cool.
Are you comfortable?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And maybe we'll leave all this in. You're perfect. Okay, cool.
Sweet.
So sorry, were you in pain?
No,
feel terrible.
I wasn't in pain.
Oh,
it
perfect.
Just gets
okay.
like,
yeah, it must feel like stiff, tighter. Right? Like it must just get like
a little bit.
Yeah,
it's weird feelings.
I bet.
Say like, however you picture it, it would feel. To have ACL surgery and it's hard to bend your knee. That's how it feels.
I know what you mean. That's like, yeah, because I'm like, well, even still, it's like I can only imagine how you feel after having surgery. Like my arm gets tired on this couch cushion and like, literally, I sound like a bitch, but like, you know what I mean? Like oh my God, please. I'm so happy you said something.
Yeah, totally.
So, and please let me know if you need like anything else.
you're sweet.
No,
good.
I feel terrible. Like
I made you
walk up
you
three flights of stairs. I'm so glad. Okay. We were talking about college, driving up to school.
And the feeling of because I went and did this unknown thing in Thailand, did I have that for college?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was, like I said, not even excited about the concept of college. And then I took a big risk with where I was going. And I was applying for colleges, like I said, not that into it, but got into kind of like Washington, University of Washington, some like schools in state, because in state tuition was like what was going to be like affordable as well.
Yeah, sure. I went to a state school, so I get that.
Yeah. And so in state tuition was kind of the plan. And there's some like programs in the Northwest where you can go to like schools in Oregon and get in state tuition. It's some program.
Okay, so, but you weren't thrilled about those? Or?
I applied to some. They were like, I didn't feel excitement towards any of the schools I got into because like whatever. And then I my stepmom was like, hey, there's this school in Colorado that's engineering, but their athletics are decent, and you don't have to write an essay or pay a fee to apply to.
No essay.
Yeah,
sign me up.
Yeah. And like a little bit out of respect to her, just kind of did it. It was like easy. I was doing other applications.
Yeah, yeah.
Like did it. Didn't think much about it. But then I emailed the track coach, and he said I like had a spot on the team based on my times.
Oh, get out! So you would walk in. You'd be on a team.
Yeah.
And like wow. Okay.
And then got invited to apply for a scholarship, and applied and got into that scholarship program that made it my best financial option.
Okay.
By far.
Yeah.
And my only chance to go out of state outside of the, Northwest program. But, and with all that being said, I had to, when they were offering the scholarship, they were kind of like, are you accepting? Well, you need to know soon if you're accepting it. Cause if not, they offer it to someone else. And so just decided to like go for it and be like, okay, I'll take this scholarship.
Yeah, big
risk
taker.
I'll be on. And so coming back from high school, I knew I was going to this college that really intimidated me. I didn't feel like I knew much about. I didn't know what engineering was.
Can I ask, did you get a chance, because you're doing all this in Thailand,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Did you get a chance to see the school at
no,
all?
No, I'd never been
That's
to
scary.
Colorado
yeah.
before I was like moving into
wow.
the dorms.
Wow, okay. So you've never even been to the state.
Yes.
Yeah. See, that's scary too.
Yeah. And so it just felt, it was like, I couldn't even explain how it felt, but basically like leaving Thailand, leaving my friends, we had this like senior trip. It was there was so much there that was just like so bougie, especially for a fucking teenager. But then coming back here and what my future looked like to me at that point was just so uncertain. And uncertain future is a huge anxiety trigger for anyone with anxiety. And definitely one for me.
Well, what's so like, again, I'm not a therapist or anything, but like what, just hearing you talk about like your home life, right? Where it's like you were brought up in what seems to be like, you know, we'll just say like you were brought up in conditions where it was fair to say unstable.
Yeah.
Right. It feels like your main concern would be that you're seeking stability. Mm-hmm. Right. And here you are, you found it. It sounds like in Thailand where mm-hmm. you were like having these good experiences. You were with your dad and your stepmom, and then it's kind of being ripped away from you. And now not only are you not going home to like something, you know, you're walking into an entirely new situation.
Yeah.
And like, would you say that's maybe like what triggered the depression?
I think that's the biggest trigger of it, of like part of my life ending that I did not want to end.
And especially like the context, I think that is so important here mm-hmm. is like when you are young and you have you don't have the life skills or the tools yet to deal with these situations, right? Because change is inevitable.
Yeah.
But like it's your first time you're going through that. So everything is amplified.
Yeah.
Like 10 times.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And I think in Thailand, I also felt pretty like socially successful and had friends that I like loved so much. We had so much fun together in a way that I didn't necessarily feel like growing up prior to that.
Yeah. And like, you had access to like do things that you would normally do with these friends. You went to clubs, you went to, you know, you're like traveling internationally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I think that was the biggest trigger. And then it was just like beyond comprehension, what felt like a trapdoor after that of like, and I think I'm someone that leans more like anxious, where if my anxiety is high enough for long enough, it like invites in depression.
Yeah, I understand that.
In a way where like that summer I just turned into someone I'd never seen before. And
so now just for logistical, you went from Thailand in June, like back home.
Yes.
Had the summer back home in Seattle, the suburb.
Yeah. So it was, I think, May until late August or September. Okay. Yeah.
And you have a version of yourself that you've never known before.
Yeah. Where I needed help from my parents to take care of me for the first time, which was horrible as someone that was so independent growing up and didn't want help, didn't need help. And I would sleep all day, wake up, cry, go back to sleep, watch a TV show. Like I was experiencing depersonalization, which a word I didn't know at the time.
Yeah.
And everything felt so dark and wrong, and I felt very doomed. I felt like there was no light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And yeah, when I'm down and depressed, I cry, which is, I mean, some people
pussy.
Can't. No, exactly. Like,
we've had people cry on this podcast before, which I'm so grateful. It's always it's a gift. It's really,
crying can be a wonderful outlet if you cry and then you have the release, and then you feel some degree better after that. And like when I'm so down like that, I cry and I sob, and then I keep crying and sobbing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't let up for hours, and then I would fall asleep, and then like all throughout the day, like it would just
like
be this
staying
awful
in your
cycle.
In your home, like your
I would I was at my mom's house with like her new husband and in
and
a room
is your
with
dad
them.
Back yet or no, is he still in
my
Thailand?
Dad and stepmom came back for part of the summer and would be like sometimes with them. They'd stay at like this cabin during summer that we used to have.
Okay.
So I'd be there a little bit of the time, and I would try and like do little things like exercise and but it all felt, and I was, one part was I was really, I don't know how much this contributed to it or it was more just like a symptom of where I was, that I was so insecure and fixated on like I had pretty bad acne at the time.
Makes it 10 times worse.
I was embarrassed to have my face be seen in a way that contributed to all of this. And then I felt mad at myself for being vain and caring that I had acne, which isn't a very
helpful
way to
think. Like I mean, I was the physical insecurity thing, like when you're young, because it's because you think it's everything.
Yeah.
Right. And again, like in my experience, it was bad. I can't imagine what it's like for women, like especially just in the culture that we live in. So, no, I think it's 100% valid to just have that amplify things to make it worse.
Totally.
Yeah.
So it was just like I people didn't recognize me. I didn't recognize myself.
Yeah.
And it was suddenly this worry of someone that I worked so hard in school and athletics and whatever, and then was at a point where I was like, can I make it to college in the fall?
Yeah.
I'm like completely debilitated right now. I need my parents to like, my parents were like talking and worried about me. And that was like so far from anything that had ever happened before. And yeah, it was like a horrible time, and I like felt doomed. So I didn't know what would happen next.
I have a very specific question, and it's going to sound silly, but I will explain why I don't think it is in the moment. What TV show were you watching at the time?
The big one that I watched constantly until I would cry or fall asleep was Scrubs.
Oh, I'm so happy I asked. I love that show. And here's the thing with like shows or books or any sort of media you're taking in when you're going through very specific times in your life,
mm-hmm.
you really develop a connection to it.
Totally.
Where, and like Scrubs is, number one, I love Scrubs.
Yeah.
Like I used to watch that growing up too, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And that's got to be like, it must, was it comforting at all? And the reason I ask is because there's so much in that show too that like could feel like a depression trigger.
Yeah, totally.
Like it hits hard sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be like, it's so tightly associated with that time in my life that it'd be interesting to watch, because I think I would feel some of that. But I was really like, I think of it as being there for me. And
yeah, no, I get it, because it's like, you know, it's, I mean, it's literally how I feel. That's why like I'm a diehard Yankee fan, like literally. It's true, and those connections are important.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious, like what I mean, were your parents trying to pull you out? Like it seems like they were aware of what was going
on. And I think they weren't sure if it was like the acne medication I was on, like,
okay,
they were doing the best I could. They had a lot going on themselves, but we kind of didn't know. And I think they were encouraging me to try and see friends, which is the last thing I wanted to do. And to exercise. So I would exercise, and do things, and just, there wasn't much that was like letting up and easing it. But then it was just the countdown towards going to school, and
which must have been dreadful. That's
wasn't looking forward to that at all. But my dad drove me down, which was very, very good. I needed that at that point, someone to physically take me, and I wasn't looking forward to it. It's like 19 hours, I think, directly, but we had some stops along the way.
Sure.
And so went to like,
did you talk with your dad about what was going on, or I'm
very open with my whole family, and had less words to describe what's going on at the time, but would explain it and share. And I think everyone like knew, and extended family and stuff like that. So I think on the way down there, it'd be kind of in and out of tears. And, I think everyone was worried for me, but, made it down there and was moving in, and things just kept going. I think I wasn't in a great place.
You're good.
But yeah, got there, and I think routine consistency met my dorm mate, who is one of my best friends to this day.
Oh, nice. Okay. So you had a good,
I wouldn't say it was like an awesome year. I think it was pretty tough.
So you get in move-in day.
Yeah.
Right. And you get set up, you get your room set up, and oh man, I don't know. We don't have to revisit any moments, but like when your dad leaves, I imagine that must have been horrible, because now it's like you're really on your own.
Some of that stuff, because I lived at times without my dad. I lived at times without my mom in a way where I didn't feel so attached in that sense. Yeah. I did feel alone in terms of, yeah, not knowing other people or having any family in Colorado or anything like that. But I think I was a little bit numb to things at that point.
Really? It was just, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It felt like pretty bland. I think looking back at that time and that like freshman year, I think the biggest word I think of is insecure.
Okay.
I felt very insecure about myself, I felt very intimidated to be at that school and a lot of imposter syndrome. Got through it one day at a time.
And it sounds like you were able to kind of get into a routine. Was it helpful to be on the track team at school?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Just having that network, being forced outside exercising with a group, big group of people.
Yeah.
Like, track was pretty social in a great way.
That's good. And I mean, when you're on a sports team in college, I feel like it's such a big commitment. So it's good that like you had that, I feel like, external factor to get you outside, to get you moving, and to also have people around you so that you could make friends and stuff like that.
Definitely really forces you to bond with the people around you.
Would you tell them about like going to school in Thailand? Was that just like the coolest thing to everyone? I bet.
Yeah, I would talk about it. I think it depends on like, I think a lot of people hear it and don't know the questions to ask and don't get it. And
how am
relate.
I doing? Because that was my fear.
Oh, you did great. Nice. You did fantastic. No, I think it is. There's plenty of things someone brings up that if I don't have any experience in, I kind of notice myself freezing up and not knowing what to ask. And so I try and just like push through and think of something to ask.
Yeah.
Because I've been on the other side of like someone's like eyes just glaze over and they move on because they don't know what that means. They're like, okay.
It is. It's so funny too, because it's like, it's such a like, it's such an experience that like, I've really maybe only talked to one other person that's had something like this. And it's like, I could see someone being like totally just like unprepared to like, whoa. But it sounds like you ended up like bonding with these people and really kind of coming into your own. Where were you like, and the thing on this podcast, right? It's like, what I'm learning, right? There's never one big moment like it is in the movies where like everything's okay and everything's fixed. It's not like that, right? But it's like, do you remember a time where you were like, hey, I've come out of this a little bit and I feel a little better? You're like, no, I'm still going through it.
I think it was like up and down for my college times and 20s. But I think being able to do it, being able to be at school, being able to, that I did feel like, wow, I wasn't in a place where I could function a bit ago. And I think talking about it with people helped a lot and made me feel better and less alone in what I just experienced. And
did were you open with it with like friends and stuff you had met, or did you talk to someone professionally or anything?
Yeah, I was open with some friends, and I didn't talk to anyone professionally about it. I think I attempted to. I have a therapist now that I love, but there's been so many like bad therapy attempts in my life.
Yeah, I think that's par for the course.
Oh my
yeah.
goodness.
It's, and we, funny enough, like we talked about it on previous episodes, it's a process. You have to just like keep trying. And you know, it's so funny because I think, at least in my case, like I'll let it get so bad sometimes that it's like, okay, I'm not currently seeing someone, but like in the past, it's been like, all right, I need to see someone today. And like, you'll reach out and be like, all right, great, we can see you in 3 weeks. And it's all right, I guess I'm just waiting 3 weeks to go through whatever. And then half the time you'll feel better. And it's like, I don't need to go. So you'll cancel it. Then if you meet with the person, it takes a few times, you're like, we don't vibe. And it's truly a process. So
a lot of emotional effort to try a new therapist and start over.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah. But it sounds like it was more like social, like you were talking with people.
And just getting back into a system where there was structure, there was sports, there was school, there's a lot of structure. And it was stressful. So
right. And
There were other times of depression there, but I don't think it ever got so debilitating. But I think freshman year, even like, I remember one time going to the bathroom during math class to cry, and things like that became more part of my story in a way that didn't know how like abnormal that was and how like unnecessary that was. So
yeah,
I would say in and out of it, I think towards the last couple years of college, felt a more established, stressed out of my fucking mind, like the workload.
I mean, to be a math and computer science major, like, you know, why have any fun? Like,
yeah, well, that on top of track, and I did the heptathlon, so it was just so many hours.
The what?
Heptathlon.
What's a heptathlon?
Men do the decathlon, and so it's track events where it's a combination of running, jumping, throwing events.
Okay, is steeplechase in there?
No, that's 3,000 meters and you jump over that into water.
Right,
that's a race, but that's not in the decathlon or heptathlon.
Okay, gotcha. So you were training for hepatitis B.
Yeah, literally.
So you're training for that, and like, oh my god, like, what was that like?
I mean, my freshman year I was so trash because I came in, a lot of people come into that sport from hurdling and jumping, like long jump, yeah, high jump. I hadn't done those things. I came into it from running mid distance,
okay,
like an 800, 400,
sure,
and throwing javelin.
Okay.
Which was a random combination in high school.
I was going to say, yeah, that's, yeah. But they were like, we need someone for javelin.
Javelin's my best event.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Nice.
And so throwing javelin and that, and then freshman year.
You've been a great warrior.
Yeah. Thank you.
In olden times.
Thank you. I mean, not emotionally, but physically. And yeah, so it freshman year was just trash at all these events. It was so embarrassing, probably part of my insecurity. Yeah, there was this practice meet where it was my first, like, they tried to make it feel real, but a hurdles race, and I just like swerved and missed a hurdle, and then just was like, everyone on the team was watching, and I was just like, okay, I just kind of jogged through the finish line and was like, humiliating. Another first time I like long jumped in that practice meet. Was this I don't know if this is the same one or a different one, but I like long jumped in a weird way where my hand caught my spike and I have like a big scar along my finger.
Oh no.
And yeah, so I was this like, I don't know, tiny 18-year-old trying to throw shot put. And sometimes they put you in, I'd only do a couple indoor pentathlons, outdoor heptathlons per year, like a handful. And other meets, I'd be practicing those events. So like, my coach would put me into like shot put to practice that.
Shot put's the one with like the ball, yes, right? The heavy ball.
And I'd be like competing against like University of Boulder shot putters. And I obviously wouldn't make it far.
Sure.
But I was just like, this is humiliating.
Yeah, that's tough. That's, yeah.
But yeah, as years went on, it was fun to grow into that event because got more competitive towards the end and was really happy to be in Colorado, made good friends, was having fun. And so there were points where it felt good to be there again and didn't want it to, was ready for the school part to be over, but yeah, was enjoying life.
Yeah, I bet. And
then adulthood.
And then adulthood happened. Well, I was going to ask, like, so I know we talked a little bit about it, but it's like, it seems like things never really got that bad again. Like, or I don't know, like, has there been a time where, you know, you felt it get close to like that low where it was depression wise?
I would say it never got that like debilitating where that deep, deep feeling of doom and like,
yeah,
I don't know if it ever got as deep to that. But yeah, when I studied abroad in Spain, I got really depressed and scared. And
what year was that? Junior year?
That was my...
By the way, new record. It only... So that's the longest it took for someone to announce they studied abroad. That's,
no,
I'm just kidding.
No, I know. Well,
that was a stupid hack joke. That's,
no, it is funny, but I don't bring it up to... I think there's pressure that it was the best time of your life, and I had
you didn't have
really
a
hard
abroad?
Time there.
I bet,
feel slightly embarrassed about that.
You're like embarrassed you studied abroad.
No, I'm being really vulnerable. Right?
No. Hey,
I'm kidding.
No, I get that though, because it's like, I don't know. I never studied abroad. I did like a 2-week program in Chile, which was like interesting.
Yeah.
But like to do it for a whole semester and then like we said, there's all this pressure and expectation and you know, to have like the best time. I don't understand why more people like don't enjoy it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You
totally.
Just had like a bit, it was like junior year, you said?
It was junior year. I got over there, felt very isolated, There was no kind of help or structure. A bunch of classes weren't working out. Only towards the end did I realize there was this like guy that helped and normally would meet you and welcome students from my school and make sure you had a place to stay and make sure your classes worked out. And I was just on my own and it was like so stressful and taking some classes in Spanish and didn't speak Spanish and and just me being prone to.
Was it Spanish math?
I tried to take some Spanish math courses that I didn't speak Spanish and I didn't have the necessary like math prerequisites and was just like,
that's hell.
Yeah. So things like that were really stressful. So wait, what was your question before?
Well, so I was asking like, has there been another time where it's like gotten close to that bad? Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say that the next biggest one was during the pandemic, I got really, really like, deeply depressed and was sobbing uncontrollably all the time.
Yeah.
Was hyper fixated on work because it felt like something within my control. I was in a relationship that was my most like serious attached relationship.
Sure.
And we had fallen so in love at the end of college and been through a lot together. And it wasn't like the right one though. And so was also dealing with that. And a lot of other formative things in my 20s that really messed me up. But
well, it's interesting because like it's that time after college, because in a similar way for me, man, that I look back at like that 2-year period after college and that was just a shit time, man. Because you're adjusting to like real life after like just going through that. And then, man, I was in a relationship too that was just, it was on and off, which is if you're on and off, get off. Like I always say that because it was brutal. And like I was doing shitty things. She was doing shitty things. Like it just wasn't.
Yeah.
And it was just adding more and more stress to both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys like room together during COVID or like was it?
We were in New York the first few months.
Okay.
And we had been here less than a year. And so we stuck it out for a little while and we're in a studio apartment. And
oh, God.
It wasn't the worst time in our relationship, honestly. it was tough and the situation was making me crazy. But I also knew it gave us a, that's some advice I give to like younger siblings. They don't always listen, but I'm like, don't move in together with a partner lightly. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, that, I mean, with my fiance too, like we, cause that was the thing with me. Like come from the same school of thought where it's like, if I'm going to move in with someone, then I plan on like, okay, this is very, very serious. I'm not going to do that just at the whim, because if you do that and it does it like that is hell.
Yeah.
Because like, you're starting to intermingle finances and stuff like that. Like,
100%. And I did do it somewhat casually. I'm like, oh, I'm moving to New York for work for this rotational program.
Yeah.
Come with me. And he was down. And, there were like doubts I was having already about the relationship, but it was great to have him here in a lot of ways and got that much more like attached and connected and lives interwoven. And asking him to leave while in New York would be asking him to move back in with his mom in a way.
So there's that extra added pressure too, because like if you're dealing with like really foundational issues, you're like, well, maybe we don't have to deal with this right now because that would mean XYZ would have to happen. And then
my life was already feeling so unstable and I was all dealing with depression, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And so it didn't feel like a possibility to go there
right
at that point.
So
in time
you guys just like stuck it out and then eventually
so he didn't want to live with my family during the pandemic. I didn't want to live with his. And so he went home to the Bay Area. I went home to Seattle area and we stayed together. And it gave space and time to think and figure it out. And we did distance for a while. And I remember at times, like I was so down and distraught and I knew for a while the relationship should be ending, and that's the main reason I got a therapist, honestly, is like this needs to end. It feels impossible.
So you were seeing the therapist while you were still seeing this guy?
Yes.
So how did you see them? How did you see the therapist if you're in a studio apartment?
No. So sorry. No, okay. So he went home to Bay. I went home to Seattle.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I was
that's
living
my
with
fault.
My sister.
I was like,
no, don't
imagine
worry.
You're taking therapy sessions with him like right next to you.
I think I was trying to. I don't, not with him in there. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's hard. No, I say that jokingly because like any like. Man, living in a studio is tough enough with like two people, just like to, from a space perspective. But oh yeah. Man, like, but that is so hard to like deal with that because like I've dealt with those bouts of depression, and it's interesting because like from my perspective, right, they come and go, and it's like I have to be aware of the triggers for it, right? So I'm trying to get better at that, but like. To deal with that and relationship issues is a mountain that I don't know if I could climb over, to be honest. Like that is so hard.
And it was, I think it was still in that, like, I'm sure you dealt with this too in those first couple years after college, but like how to be a, like, I think we were both good kids in the sense of worked hard in school, did all the right things, got good grades. And then you get into adulthood and there's no more of these like semester sized chunks and like grade book for how to be good. And then it's like, oh, your life's what a successful life looks like to you is all up to you. Like you get to define the rules that
Which,
you
can I tell
want
you, Amanda, that's
for.
I think I mean, that's one of my favorite things that like you've said on this pod, like because it's so and it's not talked about enough because I think you articulated it very well where it's like you go through life where. These, I guess, these measures of success are established for you, and then you graduate, and you're kind of you have to redefine it yourself, which you've never done before in your life because you know you were told to do XYZ and whatever, and it's hard to be angry about it because you think you get older, and it's like you realize from your parents' perspective, it's like, all right, they just wanted you to be able to take care of yourself, which is like what any parent wants, right? But to not understand how to set your life up in the way you want to live it, and to really give it critical thought for the first time is very, very difficult.
Yeah. And I think in some of that, like with a math and computer science degree when tech was booming and women in software engineering was sought after and it felt like there were so many options and I felt so, so privileged and guilt for that. Mm-hmm. And like I had all these options in the world and I could live in different places and have opportunities and I felt so bad that my only draw and there, like I said, not a ton of pressure from parents of what I did. And I was like, my only job is to make myself moderately happy. And I'm failing at that.
Oh, that's hard.
It's sad.
That's really sad.
Yeah. But got a really good therapist. And I also like was never thought about antidepressants because I had this very incorrect idea that you had to be like actively suicidal to be clinically depressed.
I did too, and I brought it up on, I think, Zach's Laughs episode. Have you seen The Great Depression by Gary Goleman? Mm. I'm going to get through one episode without mentioning Gary Goleman. I'm going to do it. It's going to happen. We're going to see. But I watched his special, The Great Depression. I went to go to the live taping, and that was when I was like, oh, I need medication. Mm. So if you've ever watched a special, and especially if you're at home, you suffer from depression, go watch it. It's incredible, and it'll change your life. But like in that same way, I was like, no, I sometimes I think about killing myself, but like never planned any action or anything
Same,
like that.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, those thoughts are there. And then you're like, oh, no, this is. And here's my other thing with antidepressants. And this is my little rant with it. With it, it's like I'm putting down the can. So, you know, I'm being serious.
This is serious.
My thing is like you've never actively had. And this is why the stigma, I think, needs to go away with it, because you've never had a dopamine zapping device in your pocket that you're on for 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
So if you need a little boost, that's okay. You know what I mean? In the history of civilization, we've never had a phone. So like that's literally designed to zap you of it. So if you need something, that's okay.
I think about that too of like, am I someone that would need antidepressants if I lived in a place with multi-generations of families and in an actual community and spent time outside each day and things like no, probably not. Even if it wasn't this utopia, even if it was 50% better, maybe not. But for where I am right now, if it can take the edge off and help me get through, then it's been one of the best things that's happened to my life.
Yeah. What are you on? If you want to share.
I don't care. I'm on Lexapro.
Nice. Okay.
Lexaho.
Lexaho. I love that. We've had some Lexahos on this pod.
Nice.
What am I on? I'm on Cymbalta right now.
Okay, nice.
And what's interesting, and I think this speaks to more like my specific sensitivity with medication, is that I was prescribed 20 milligrams and I actually saw a new psychiatrist and they were like, all right, I would give starting to anyone on antidepressants. Do you want me to move the chair?
Nope, just was going to angle it.
You got it.
Thank you.
They were like starting, I would start someone at least on 30 milligrams.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. But also at the same time, I'm very sensitive to like caffeine. Mm-hmm. And like I just took a Claritin D literally for the first time. Well, first time this allergy season. Felt like I was on top of the world. Mm-hmm. Like, and then I looked it up. This is, I guess, scary. But I guess the D in Claritin D is, I forget the name of the drug, but it's like the meth thing.
Okay.
So it's like the little, because, you know, they use Claritin D sometimes to make meth.
Okay.
Did you know that?
Uh-uh.
Oh, no, they do. So like when you go to get Claritin D at the pharmacy, they'll be like, can we see your driver's license? Uh-huh. You have to do it. And they like take your name down. You can only buy so much. And then I asked ChatGPT, our good friend. Mm-hmm. And it was like,
Chad.
Love it. And then he was like, you have to, I'm like giving a gender to ChatGPT. But Chad was like,
Chad to me.
It's Chad to you. Mm-hmm. I love it. And then, yeah, they were basically like, it's normal to feel euphoria mm-hmm. on Claritin D. So I was like, man, I thought I was just
interesting.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I had no idea. Well, like, good to know. I'll pop on.
I don't. Like, yeah, and I was like, I don't know if I love that about Claritin D because now I'm like, I kind of want to take it just to feel good, but I haven't. I'm not. I'm gonna wait for my allergy symptoms to hop back in. And
that's good.
My other question I was gonna ask too is, you mentioned like take the edge off.
Yeah.
Do you have any like vices or anything like that? Like that you like, do you drink?
Like harmful?
Not even harmful, just something you do. Yeah.
I would say something I'm grateful for is that when I am so like down and in a bad place, I tend to make good decisions for how to handle it.
Yeah.
As good as I can. So I think that's in this time with my therapist, a time that was so frustrating where I read so many self-help books during the pandemic. One that I really recommend is Upward Spiral. It's about the neuroscience of depression that I learned
from Upward Spiral. I'm going to write that
Upward
down.
Upward Spiral.
Yeah.
Another one is like Atomic Habits.
Atomic Habits, and I've heard of.
Yeah. I was so depressed and I was meditating every day. I was exercising almost every day.
Okay. And you were still depressed with all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, the pandemic's such a weird situation. One, I don't think we've even really like deconstructed it as a culture.
Yeah.
Right. I think we're all just still even, you know, 3 years later since it ended, like we're all still like, I don't even want to think about that time. But like we haven't even like unpacked it.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, it's like it sucks that like none of that would be working for you during that time.
And so I thought I could work hard enough to get out of depression.
Oh, God, isn't that the thinking? Yeah, I get you. Yeah, that's classic.
And so I just had a therapist that was like, you should talk to a psychiatrist and consider medication because you're working so hard and using all the tools I'm giving you. And I don't know what Amanda I'm going to get, if it's going to be in tears immediately the second we start a session.
Your therapist said, I don't know what Amanda I'm going to get.
Yeah.
Aww.
Or she's like, or you're like chipper self. That's positive and a dreamer. And so I considered it and I figured I would try. And there was a period where I was on Lexapro and I was like, oh my God. Wow, I've built this cool life. Now I get to start enjoying it for the first time.
Oh, that's so sweet. And did you feel like you started enjoying things after that?
Yeah, it helped a ton. There was a little bit of like what I call a carefree period where like I was still making to-do lists every single day, an hour of my life, but I like wasn't doing them. I wasn't finishing them.
Amanda.
I know. I'm a bad girl. And it felt like, am I on too many meds? And they were like, no.
Yeah.
And then it like simmered down and it just got to a point where it felt like for the first time, my emotions were just matching reality.
Yeah.
And that's what I say when people ask sorry to interrupt you.
No, like, you're good. Please.
If someone's like, oh, does it take away your emotions or make you feel numb? And it's like, no, it makes it so I'm not having these larger than life, like existential depression about human nature. And I'm just like, if I have a breakup, I'm sad. If I have a bad day, I'm sad. If I don't, I'm okay.
I know. And that's so true, because, and the way like antidepressants were described to me when I was prescribed them is, and I love this, and I think it aligns, which is that like, it's like having a headache. And then when you take Tylenol, you know how like after 30 minutes later, you like, it'll just be gone and you'll be like, oh, I don't have a headache anymore. Mm-hmm. Like you'll just like have that thought. So I totally get that. Yeah. Amanda, we usually end the podcast with just, if anyone is going through something similar right now, what advice would you give to them?
Ooh, a couple things for me that help. Obviously, like, seek medical help. And
yeah, that's number one.
Yeah, but journaling has been a big tool that I use.
I'm terrible with journaling.
It's hard to get into it.
It's hard, man. Go.
What happens for you? Like, what stops you with journaling?
Well, it's so funny because it's like, and this is like no fault. Like with journaling, it's just like, it's another thing that I like have to do. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I imagine one of the reasons I really should do it is because, especially as creatives, mm-hmm. do you ever go back through your journals and you're like, this is how I'm feeling. Let's take some of these ideas and see if I can create with it.
Oh,
do you ever do that or no?
Not to like, no, I feel like I go back to journals and I'm like, oh my God, she was so sad.
Oh dude, I know. Like I literally, it's funny. And this is no fault of my fiance. I don't blame her for this at all. But she was like doing some spring cleaning and like, she like accidentally opened the first page and she was like, man.
Are you okay?
Yeah, yeah. She was like very concerned.
Yeah.
And I was like, nope, that's why nobody's supposed to read it.
Sometimes I'll use a journal for comedy writing and journaling. Yeah. And
oh,
I'll like
no, you got it.
It's so
bad.
I'll
separate.
Flip back to a page and be like, whoa, it's out of context. Like,
I love like going back to, is that a journal or a joke? Maybe
exactly.
It's both. Yeah.
It's like either way, dark. Yeah. And the other thing, one like, I think two journaling tactics, or it doesn't have to be journaling. It can be like set out loud to yourself or whatever. I've been doing that lately.
You doing affirmations or anything?
Not affirmations, sometimes gratitude lists, but like, okay, I have multiple ideas. Let me do the first two journal ideas. One is journal to yourself from the perspective of your future self.
Let me say, journal to yourself from the perspective of your future self. Oh, that's sweet.
I did that once and it was such a like powerful reaction. And I started crying at first, but it gave this feeling, which is gone so much when I'm anxious and depressed. That's like, I'm like, whoa, I have a me in the future that's looking back and is like telling me like, I'm going to be okay.
It's such a easy way too, and like thought experiment to like step outside of yourself too.
And which zoom out. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's really good.
So that one, another one is just whatever experience or this is more practical if it's like day to day issues that you're experiencing, or kind of more reality based issues of like, write down exactly how you feel and exactly what you're going through, put it in a box. And then if you were to say that to your best friend, or if your best friend came to you with that problem, what would you tell to them? And we're so much nicer to our friends than ourselves.
Yeah. And that's another thing. Yeah. I try to like come to it. From right, real think about full circle, right? Like even bombing in front of your friends, we were talking about before. It's like my reaction would be totally different than like how I speak to myself. Just so.
Oh, totally.
Amanda, one thing I love about you is that, and I love this, which is that that's the first practical answer we've gotten for things people can do today. Which is like I feel
that's
like your
me.
Vibe,
yeah.
Like which I love. So it's so which is good because I. You know, I think so many times we talk about these conceptually.
Yeah.
But like these are things that you can actually do today. And honestly, like maybe I will start this week and I say I'm going to start journaling and I just never
do. Well, here, if journaling isn't your thing, because I think that is hard for people. And if you're especially you're a writer for comedy, so it's hard to write and see the trash that comes out of your brain and like feel good. Like, when you start, you want it to like sound eloquent or something. Ugh. So throw that out and just do.
That's like, honestly. Yeah.
But if not, like I've been in. I'm figuring out if this is good or bad. It's bad for the environment, but like in ChatGPT doing the voice transcription, and I'm not doing the back and forth, but it's just like turning my words into text, but I just do a voice note. I use Chad for a lot of like emotional support, especially when I'm fixated on something and I'm like, I don't want to keep bothering a friend or a person about this, but I'll just voice note everything on my mind. Just like let it all out. And every little thing, big or small, anything that comes to mind, and just get it out. And that process by itself of just the saying is so helpful. It's journaling, but it's more accessible.
Does it come back with like things to address everything?
Yeah,
that's helpful.
It helps kind of organize it, keep track of it, say it back to you. things like that. So that's been really helpful lately.
And it's good. Like, I think what people need to keep in mind is that while that tool is so useful and helpful, it does not take the place of a person 100%. Therapist. So I think that's, I'm glad we're like talking about this, because it's like, that's super useful, but obviously
it's an extension of a tool.
Yes, exactly.
And then I'll have that conversation with my sister or a friend and be like, wait, that was so much better than ChatGPT.
I don't
want to use it as a solution or as that thing, but I think it's like one sounding board that like reflects what I've said to it and kind of like documents it in a way.
Totally,
so it's less about what it says back and honestly more about getting it out of my head and out into the world in a way that's quicker, more accessible, less of a whole to do than journaling.
Totally. And you can like take that, those notes too, and like bring them to your therapy sessions even, I'm sure. So
I'll be like, hey, can you summarize what's been going on for therapy?
Really? Will you say that to her? That's incredible.
Or I'm like, can you summarize this whole thing and I'm going to text to my friend Julia, and then it'll do that, and then I'll send her screenshots
of how you're feeling and like, oh my god,
of what it responds about the how I'm feeling or just the scenario that happened.
Wow,
you can like do voice notes and transcribe them and put them in.
Are you a fan of like ever sending like voice notes directly to your friend? I've been doing that recently. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I used to think it was weird, but now I think it's like fine.
Oh, it's great. You get so much out.
Oh my God.
You get so much out, and it's so much richer, the tone, everything than just words and text.
This was incredible. Amanda, tell the people where they can find you.
Oh, I'm on Instagram. New Instagram handle alert.
Ooh.
Amanda G Comedy. So
love
Amanda.
It.
The letter G Comedy on Instagram and TikTok.
I love it so much. And you've been posting more, which I love. That's fantastic.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, no, they're good. They're funny. Yes. Yes. Just put it out there, people. Like literally, and they're so funny. So you're gonna love it, guys. Follow her on Instagram and TikTok.
Thank you so much.
New show at Flophouse coming in early September.
Rebranded
show. Does that have an Instagram account as well?
Yes. What's the name of the show? Straight Face Comedy Show on Instagram.
Perfect. With Gabe Corser, another hilarious comedian.
Yes.
And I don't think this episode's going to come out in time, but hopefully they're going to be running other ones. So just follow Amanda.
That's okay.
You'll get all the
monthly
updates
show.
And everything like that. Monthly show. Amanda, thank you so much for the time. This was so much fun. You're the absolute best.
You're one of my favorites.
Right back at you. And you're so freaking funny. I love everything you do. And I'm so excited to see, you know, what's next and what's in store. And thanks for opening up on the pod. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me. First podcast.
I'm honored. I'm so honored. That means so much. And here's to hoping we left you a little higher. I know. It's cheesy. It's very cheesy, but we try.
Perfect. That's me.
That was great.